Hey, it's Diane. Great to be back with you for our Tuesday podcast. On my mind, what else but the Mueller report? 2 days after Attorney General William Barr submitted a four-page summary of Mueller's findings to Congress, Washington seems left with as many questions as answers. Democrats are demanding release of the full report by April 2nd, while Trump and Republican lawmakers have gone on the offensive, calling for an investigation into why the special counsel was created in the first place. To help us make sense of it all, I called on Washington Post columnist E.J. Dionne. E.J. Dionne, the headlines in the New York Times said, Mueller finds no Trump-Russia collusion and cloud lifted on Trump presidency. Would you agree totally with those two statements?
I want to step back, if I can, for a second and sort of suggest the following, that very sweeping judgments about Trump, about American politics, about Russia's role are being made before anyone in Congress and anyone in the general public has actually had a chance to see the Mueller report.
Exactly.
We are operating entirely on a four-page letter written by Attorney General Barr, who is hardly a neutral here. He is an appointee of the president. As a number of people have pointed out, not a single full sentence from the Mueller report is quoted in this.
Wow. I am confused as to why we just saw a four-page letter from Attorney General Barr as opposed to a more comprehensive report. Shouldn't there have been more detail included in that first report?
Well, I certainly would have liked to see a lot more detail. But again, I don't think we should be shocked. When Barr was testifying before Congress, he never said outright, I'm going to release the Mueller report. He always gave very guarded, some might say squirrely answers to questions from Democratic senators about whether he would release the report. So I don't think we should be shocked that we got a four-page letter, but I completely agree with you. I think we should have seen more.
So help me to understand exactly how much power Attorney General Barr has here in terms of what gets released and what does not.
It would appear in the first instance that he has quite a lot of power because there are two ways in which information could be excluded, and some of them might be legitimate. The legitimate way would be excluding bits of information that might endanger intelligence sources. And I think Democrats who want the whole report have said very small exclusions of that sort they could understand. A second kind will be whether parts are left out because they reflect ongoing investigations. And I think, as a lot of people have also pointed out, we know there are ongoing investigations in the Southern District of New York and other U.S. attorneys' offices. So those are two areas where Barr might have a legitimate claim to exclude certain things. The question is whether he excludes lots of things, whether he excludes things that prevent us from having a full sense of what Mueller says. And we're only going to see that when he finally releases whatever he's going to release.
I'm curious about the report stating that, quote, the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities. What does that mean when we know that so many around President Trump have been in very close contact with the Russians both before and after the elections.
I think that sentence is key and raises more questions than it answers, because we don't have any of the surrounding material. And by the way, maybe that is the one full sentence. I said no full sentences. I don't know if that might be the full sentence in that he has released. There's a peculiar discrepancy between how Barr describes the conclusion and how Mueller says it. Barr says the special counsel's investigation did not find that the Trump campaign or anyone associated with it coordinated with Russia, etc. He quotes Mueller as saying the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities. Two things about that. Establish is not the same as find. And maybe I'm parsing here, but that suggests that there's other stuff in the Mueller report that we need to know about. And that word government is also important, because we know there are lots of meetings between Trump and various Russian figures linked to the government. And so we need to know a lot more about what Mueller said. Did Mueller take a very narrow, and you know, from a lawyer's point of view, that could be quite defensible, a very narrow view of what was prosecutable on Russian interference, and say, you know, the Russians offered help. There were these meetings, but we couldn't find any direct evidence that the Trump campaign actively cooperated with the Russian government, meaning presumably sharing information. There could be an awful lot of contacts between the Trump campaign and the Russians and still have them fall short of the standard Mueller seems to set in that sentence. The other thing that in that letter that is not talked about very much, my colleague Chuck Lane wrote about it in the Washington Post today, is that he does find Russian interference in our election, and we know that that Russian interference was designed to elect President Trump. I think, again, one of the things that I want to know about the Mueller report is how much detail does he go into? Does he describe the meetings that happened between various Trump campaign folks and the Russians, and then argue that he couldn't find a criminal charge of conspiracy? Or does he not make those links? Again, we don't know exactly what Mueller says about those things, but he is very clear that the Russians interfered. And putting aside all of the controversy on Trump, that is surely something we should pay attention to looking forward to the 2020 election. It does not appear we are doing very much to stop some of the same things from happening again. And this is clearly better than many of Trump's defenders expected, and worse from the point of view of tough charges than Trump's critics suggested. But I, again, to go back to where I started, I really want to see the report, and I think we should all see the report before we reach all of the conclusions that we're seeing out there from politicians and journalists and commentators.
And what about the question of obstruction of justice? What did the letter have to say about that?
Mueller punted. He chose not to make a call. And he had to know that given Barr's own attacks on the investigation itself, Barr was not about to bring obstruction charges against Trump. This is something that obviously bothers a lot of people, particularly critics of Mr. Barr and critics of Trump. When Barr testified before Congress, he made very clear that he has such an expansive view of presidential power and such an expansive view of the president's right to issue orders, really, to the Justice Department, that it was almost impossible for Barr, under his own standard, to find any obstruction of justice here. What the letter says is that Mueller does not exonerate Trump, meaning presumably, again, we have a lot of information in there where Barr thinks there might be a case for charging obstruction of justice. And again, I think that's the really bothersome thing here. The special counsel is appointed to take certain key decisions out of the hands of political officials. And Mueller, in this case, chose to put the key decision here, whether to suggest prosecution or at least the existence of obstruction or not, he takes that decision out of his own hands and gives it back to Barr. And I think Mueller should appear before Congress to explain his various decisions. And I think there'll be a lot of focus on why he chose not to make that call himself. It's not at all surprising that Barr made the call he did. It is disturbing that he and Rod Rosenstein took only 2 days to go through this. And after 675 days of investigation, they say, we looked at this, no obstruction, let's move on.
So how difficult will it be for Congress to call Mueller in for hearings?
I think that, again, I don't know that there is any law surrounding this special counsel that would say Congress can't call him in. I presume at some point, depending on how this controversy goes forward, depending on what the Mueller report says, I presume they could subpoena him to come in. I just don't know how resistant Mueller will be to answering questions. Everyone who knows him, and I know this from people who are Democrats who have no particular sympathy for Trump, everybody who knows Mueller says he's a straight shooter, and I would presume that he would not have any objection to explaining himself or the decisions he's made. But we'll, again, know that one of these days, too.
But then the question becomes, would Republicans want him to explain himself?
Well, probably not at this point. I mean, Republicans, for almost to a person so far, unless I've missed one, seem very happy to push this whole matter aside. And if I can say just on the Democratic side, I have always thought of impeachment not as something that should be rushed to, but as a last resort. I think there is a strong case to be made that the country in the long run would be far better off if the voters decided to remove President Trump from office and there would be no call no cries on the other side that this was done by the deep state or someone. It would be the voters themselves rendering a judgment on the Trump presidency. And by the way, Republicans who defend Trump would be on the ballot with him. So I don't think that, you know, progressives or Trump opponents should necessarily mourn the idea that, well, gee whiz, impeachment can't start tomorrow morning. I think that it may well be the likelihood right now is that we're going to have to do this through the normal political process, and there's a lot to be said for that.
E.J., why do you suppose Mr. Mueller did not interview President Trump directly?
If I had two questions that I would want to ask Mr. Mueller, one would be about why he didn't make the call on obstruction, but the other is why he didn't press harder to interview President Trump, because that interview would have been critical to making the call on obstruction, because he could have pressed the president on, you know, his motivations and various decisions he made, starting with firing FBI Director James Comey. And he chose not to do that. And I don't know whether it's because he read his mandate narrowly. I don't know if it's because he didn't want to push a big constitutional fight. Everybody has made fun of the president's lawyers, particularly Rudy Giuliani, and all the strange statements they have made on television at various points. But it appears that all of their stonewalling and back and forth somehow pushed Mueller away from, you know, insisting on an interview with the president. And I sure want to know more about why he made that decision.
So Democrats are demanding release of the entire report. How likely is it that we in the public and the Democrats and the Republicans are going to be able to read?
You know, the Democrats hold the majority in the House, and they are therefore control an important piece of the government. They have every right to demand that this report be turned over to them. And as soon as this report gets to Capitol Hill, one way or another, I am pretty sure that the public is going to find out what's in it. I think that the Republicans are in a bit of a box here, in that if they continue to refuse to release the Mueller report, the implication that many will draw, and not unreasonably, is they actually don't want the public to see parts of the report that would suggest that the letter Attorney General Barr wrote is in no way complete. It would suggest that there is stuff here that the president doesn't want us to see. And, you know, in one sense, that would be speculation, but it's hard not to conclude that if they really try to stonewall release of the report. That's why I think we are going to learn more about the report at some point. The longer they sit on it, the more those suspicions will grow.
And now a quick break. When we come back, more from E.J. Dionne. And we're back. Here's the rest of my conversation with E.J. Dionne, columnist at The Washington Post and senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Trump and his Republican allies have now really gone on the offensive, vowing to punish those responsible for the Russia investigation, even using the word traitor. I mean, what do you make of this treason?
The Republicans have gone over the top again and again and again. And what would appear to be the case sitting here right now before we see the full Mueller report is that going over the top consistently serves their interests. I think they move the goalposts on the public debate. They have already started attacking the press, and they're not alone in this, for revealing actual facts about Trump's connections with Russia, including, for example, the fact that he lied outright about negotiations over a Trump Tower in Moscow. Those were entirely legitimate stories, and yet now we are supposed to believe that the press shouldn't have asked any of those questions about Russia. So what they're saying is outrageous, but going over the top really serves their interests. It certainly served their interest when they were attacking Hillary Clinton before Trump was president. And so far, they have had an impact on the mainstream conversation by going so far outside the mainstream that they, as I said, move the goalposts of the public conversation.
So the country is already divided. It would seem that it's going to be divided even further if this report is finally released, because the White House is calling on certain Democrats, saying they should resign, that they are no longer welcome in the White House. What are we coming to, EJ?
Well, I think we're going to be divided as long as Donald Trump is president, and we'll probably have some lingering division quite a while after that. I am not at all surprised by this, but I do really wonder whether the pushback they're offering now may yet prove to be counterproductive in two ways. One is, if the Mueller report actually is more damning than Barr's letter suggests, you're going to see kind of a radical flip in the nature of the story. And I think they are kind of triumphing in the press coverage now, but that's only going to make the fall greater if there is damning stuff in the Mueller report. I think the second thing is Trump really had an opportunity here to say, this is behind us, as I've said all along, there's no conclusion. You know, I shouldn't have been investigated for all this time, but, you know, this is a legitimate inquiry and let's move forward. But that's just not his style. And I think it's also not his political strategy. I think Trump, from the beginning, has shown that he believes that his only way of winning is on the basis of a politics that divides. And it helped win him those majorities in those three states that gave him an electoral college victory. And I just don't see that he's going to back away from that strategy between now and 2020.
On the other hand, DJ, the president himself has said he believes the full report should be released. Now, how is he going to back away from that statement?
Knowing Trump, he'll deny he ever said it. But I do think that does make it even more difficult for Barr to sit on the entire report. But, you know, I don't expect any consistency from President Trump on this matter, and it will just be another talking point, another thing we argue about. That's what's so dispiriting about this entire period, is past statements don't seem to matter, consistency doesn't seem to matter, and we just move on from thing to thing and kind of ignore issues that, you know, a week earlier were sort of front page news. It's why this period is both exhausting and debilitating to our democracy.
So to what extent are we already seeing an impact on the 2020 race from the arguments over this report?
I mean, it's very clear that Barr's letter, whether it was crafted for political reasons or not, has had a big political effect. The sort of the conventional wisdom at this point is this is a big defeat for Democrats. This is a big victory for Trump. It increases his chances of reelection. That you've seen that all over the place since Sunday. So it's had a material effect on the conversation. On the other hand, I'm not sure it's going to move public opinion very much at all. You go back to the 2018 elections, and the Democrats won a popular vote majority in all of those House races of nearly 10 million. 10 million more voters voted Democratic than Republican. That suggests a country that has, to put it mildly, deep doubts about Trump and the direction of the country right now. I don't think anything in Barr's letter is going to move large numbers among those voters who turned out to vote Democratic in the House elections. So in many ways, as you suggested earlier, we were divided before Barr's letter, we'll be divided after, and we'll be divided after we learn whatever we learn from the Mueller report. And I'd be very surprised if we see enormous movement in Trump's approval ratings because of what we've seen over the last few days.
EJ, as you perhaps know, there have been lots of questions regarding the comparison between what's going on now and the final resignation of Richard Nixon as president. Do you see any similarities here?
Well, I see more differences than similarities. Difference number one, when Watergate was being investigated by a special counsel, a special prosecutor, Congress, which was under control of the Democrats, was also investigating. So these happened simultaneously. That's not what happened this time because the Republicans, particularly in the House, didn't want to investigate Trump. They actually were more interested in investigating the investigation. And that's, in a sense, slowed everything down to Trump's benefit. And we forget that it was really the Congress that helped produce the smoking gun when Alexander Butterfield, the Nixon aide, revealed that there was a taping system in the White House.
Right.
And so that's a huge difference. And now Democrats in the House are going to have to pick up and kind of start anew. And already there's pressure because of the Mueller report to say, well, this hasn't been investigated already. Why are you looking into it? And they're going to have to make a case that, no, there are issues here left over. And again, I think the actual content of the Mueller report will make a big difference here. I think, secondly, on the one hand, we forget how similar the Republican reaction was to Nixon. It took a long time for most Republicans to turn on Nixon. We remember the end when a lot of Republicans said he has to go. We don't remember the long period where they didn't take that position at all. On the other hand, the Republican Party that existed when Richard Nixon was president was a much more moderate party. There were people we actually call liberal Republicans in the party in those days. Those folks are gone. There is not the degree of dissent in the Republican Party that there was in the Nixon era. And I think those two facts, the fact that the investigations by the special counsel and the Congress were not linked, and the fact that the Republican Party is a different party, make this a very different time from Watergate.
So, looking ahead, what is your best guess as to how we go forward from here?
Well, first, I think that Democratic presidential candidates, like Democratic congressional candidates in 2018, are not going to be focused simply on Trump and Russia. What's going on the campaign trail is talk about other issues, talk about issues related to the economy, to health care, to climate change, and a lot of other areas in public life. And depending, again, on what the report actually says, the effect will probably be to push politics a bit more in those directions, and that's not by any means entirely a bad thing. But the other side of it is that we do have ongoing investigations of the president in the Southern District of New York and in other U.S. attorney's offices. Those are going to continue unless the attorney general chooses to shut them down, and that would create an enormous blowback. And I think Democrats in Congress are going to continue to hold hearings and investigate other aspects of the Trump presidency, and I suspect they will still be interested in the Russia story. So that's my best guess of how we go forward. But again, to go back to where both of us have been all during this conversation, it is really hard to make predictions on the basis of a four-page letter rather than the report itself.
I am shocked to hear you suggest that the Attorney General could shut down investigations, ongoing investigations in New York, L.A., Virginia, the District of Columbia. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, I'm saying if he did that, I hope he doesn't do it.
But could he?
Do I think that it is possible that pressure might be brought on those agencies? They are technically under the Attorney General. So I'm only suggesting there was a big if there. I certainly hope that doesn't happen. I trust that won't happen. But, I think it's 100% outside the realm of possibility? No, I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility that some pressure is brought on those offices. But, again, I just hope that doesn't happen.
Well, I am with you there. I hope that doesn't happen. E.J. Dionne, as always, great to talk with you.
A great joy to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's all for today. I'd love to hear what's on your mind. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. You can find all our podcasts and even old Diane Rehm shows at dianerehm.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineer this week is Natalie Urib-Lipker. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you on Friday. I'm Diane Rehm.